All right. Well, for the record, my name is Kiala Eid. I'm the presiding judge today. I'm joined by Judge Jennifer Frisch and Judge Sarah Wheelock. And this is A24-0158, Denise Jean Thordson, petitioner respondent versus Commissioner of Public Safety appellant. The appellant, the commissioner will have 15 minutes and then 5 minutes for rebuttal. Ms. Thordson, you will have 15. Ms. Thordson will have 15 minutes for her argument. There will be a recording made available on our website this afternoon or tomorrow. That's the only official recording to be made of this proceeding. Any violation of that rule could result in sanction or contempt proceedings. Counsel, when you're ready to proceed, please just start by identifying yourselves for the record, and then you can begin your argument, beginning with you, Mr. Is it Marsolik?
Correct, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
May it please the court, my name is Corey Marsolik. I represent the appellant Commissioner of Public Safety, asking this court to reverse the district court's rescission of Thordson's driver's license because the trooper complied with the 171177 advisory based on the Supreme Court's recent opinion in Nash, which said that refusal to take a test as a crime satisfies the advisory requirement. That is what the district court found that the trooper did here, and that is what the record supports, that the trooper obtained a warrant, requested a blood, told the driver, Ms. Thordson, that he was requesting a blood sample, and informed her that refusal to take a test is a crime.
Can I just ask you, and I'm not trying to give you a hard time about this. I know that the Attorney General's office is very busy, but why didn't it? Last I checked, you hadn't submitted a notice of supplemental authority about Nash. I mean, we were aware of Nash, but it seemed like that might have been an appropriate notice of supplemental authority. Did you submit that?
I don't believe we submitted a notice of supplemental authority, but we did submit our reply brief after the Supreme Court in Nash and cite it there.
All right.
So that's
Okay.
so we did cite it in our reply brief if we the court would like a citation of
No,
supplemental authority by
that's
chance.
okay.
Yep. Further, I know that the Ms. Thordson raised in her respondent's brief the prescription drug defense. It's our first position that this court's February 14th, 2024 order, which denied their cross appeal on this issue because the issue would potentially be moot, indicated that it is not before this court and would properly be before this court on remand.
Where does it
And
say that in our order? I didn't read that in our order at all.
well, the order specifically says that she did preserve the arguments, but that the NORA did not create a cross appeal because the district court ultimately rescinded the revocation of respondent's license.
Right. It's not part of the cross appeal, but it's part of the decision.
It's part of the district court's decision. Yes, I would note that the two other court of appeals opinions that I found that cite court of appeals orders that use the exact same language do specifically state that the respondent can urge those arguments as alternate grounds for affirmance. This order did not do that here, and that's why we took the position that it was not properly before this court. We would also note that the Supreme Court, in a different context, has somewhat urged that it's not proper to ask for affirmance on grounds that the basically ask for affirmance on grounds that the lower court rejected. But even if this court were to consider Thordson's prescription drug defense arguments, the record is sufficient to support the district court's conclusions that she did not meet her burden to prove the affirmative defense, and that's because she did not introduce testimony affirmative evidence to support that she was taking it in accordance with her prescriptions. The district court found in the record on pages 44 and 45 support that her expert, Ms. Seuss, the physician's assistant prescribing it, could not say that the concentration levels in her test results were consistent with using the prescription as prescribed. And the district court also noted that Ms. Thordson articulated that she does not always take the prescription as prescribed because she doesn't take it on weekends, or sometimes doesn't take it on weekends. And further, the district court found, based on Ms. Seuss' testimony, that she could not say that using marijuana with the Adderall was using it in accordance with the terms of her prescription. So even were this court to reach the prescription drug defense issue, the district court properly concluded that Ms. Thorson did not meet her burden on that issue because she did not produce evidence that she was taking the prescription in accordance with the terms of her prescription as required by the affirmative drug defense in 171177.
It seems to me that I was concerned that there was some kind of inversion of the requirement there in terms of the sort of burden of proof, that there's a difference between asserting that there was testimony that somebody, that the concentration was not consistent with the prescription versus testimony that it was in fact consistent with the prescription. Can you help me with that a little bit, trying to understand, you know, what was the burden on appellant versus, the state?
Well, the burden for Ms. Thordson in the district court was to prove that she was using the prescription according to the terms of a prescription issued according to sections 152.1.1 and 152.1.2. And the district court found that she did not prove that she was using it in accordance with her prescription because she did not produce evidence to support that she was, in fact, taking it according to the terms of that prescription. The district court's finding that she wasn't using it according to the terms of her prescription is not clearly erroneous. So I think the burden was on petitioner in the district court, Ms. Thorson, to proffer evidence to support her assertion that she was using it in accordance with her prescription. The district court found that she did not do that. And in Ms. Thorson's respondent's brief here, her assertion was that the lack of evidence that she couldn't do it was evidence that she could. And I think that inverts the burden and places whereas the burden is for her to prove affirmative evidence that she could use it in accordance with the terms of her prescription. And the district court found that she did not do that. That finding is not clearly erroneous because it is supported by the record.
Do we have to find that there was do we have to determine that the district court made an implicit credibility finding that Ms. Thorson was not credible when she testified that she was taking her prescription as prescribed? The district court doesn't explicitly say that either in the findings of fact or in the conclusions of law. I mean, the district court notes that she testified she was taking it as prescribed, following the instructions of the medication, which would presumably, if there were instructions on the medication that said you can't mix this with marijuana, you know, that would have applied. So is that your position, that there's an implicit credibility finding here?
I think so, because the district court also found that Ms. Thorson herself testified that she doesn't always take the prescription according with its terms. So her testimony that she does is contradicted by her own testimony that she doesn't. So the district court found that she didn't, based on her own testimony that she said that she didn't, because she doesn't take it on the weekends. And again, it's her burden to prove that she was taking it according with the terms of the prescription. And her own expert, which the district court credited, testified that she could not say that she could take the prescription while using marijuana, or she could not use the marijuana while taking the Adderall, and she could not say that the concentration levels in the test results were consistent with the terms of her prescription.
Is this a mixed question of law and fact, where we're reviewing the findings of fact for a clear error and then determining, if there are no clearly erroneous findings of fact, whether or not that meets the preponderance standard? Or is it an abuse of discretion for the district court's determination that it did not meet the preponderance standard?
I believe that's an open question in this context, Your Honor, about whether or not meeting this affirmative defense would be reviewed de novo, whether or not the evidence met the preponderance. I mean, the historical facts would obviously be reviewed for clear error, but it's not clear what the, there's no case law on what the elements of the prescription drug defense, what standard of review would apply. I think under this mixed question, it would be a abuse of discretion standard, because I think the terms of the prescription are something that could vary, and that would be for the district court to find, and whether or not that would meet a preponderance to show that they were using it in accordance with its terms. I think the abuse of discretion standard would more properly accord with what the affirmative defense is in this case. Because I think it's the district court is better positioned to determine what the terms of the prescription are and whether or not they're taking them in accordance with those terms versus and whether or not they meet the preponderance of the evidence. Because I think there's a variety of ways in which a person could meet that burden. And so the district court is in a better position to make the determination about whether or not that burden has been met. If there are no further questions, we would ask this court reverse the district court's order rescinding the revocation of petitioners of Ms. Thornton's driver's license.
Thank you, Mr. Marsalek. Ms. Olson?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Michelle Olson, and I represent the respondent, Ms. Thornton, in this matter. Just getting to the issue of whether or not to move forward with the prescription drug defense. My understanding and my interpretation of the order was that we preserved the issue so we could proceed for judicial economy's sake instead of going for, if there was a remand, back down, then bringing it back up to you, because that likely would be where we're at. So,
Ms. Olson, can I just ask a question for clarification purposes? Are you conceding the first issue in light of Nash?
I am not, Your Honor. I just wanted to clear up why we did present our second argument. I think
why don't you tell us why Nash doesn't control the first issue?
I think Nash can control the first issue, Your Honor.
You do say in your brief that Nash is directly on point.
I agree that Nash is directly on point with the Court of Appeals. I do think under reviewing the Supreme Court's new ruling that with the facts of this case, there can be some distinctions made where in this situation, the officer, from my understanding, the officer prior to the search warrant even being granted, whether or not it was going to be granted, had said that there was going to be a blood test, and that if he hadn't, and that kind of implied that was going to be the test that needed to be taken, not that there was an alternative option, where my understanding of Nash was that originally in the facts of that case that there was a warrant given, and that he said a blood test and taking a test is, or not taking a test is a crime. I think here we had the further issue of this had been implied that was the only offering test. There wasn't a secondary test. And then going forward to further confuse, where it once again was reiterated, the warrant wasn't be able to be fully read, and it didn't allow then Ms. Thornton to make that informed decision, which is the whole point of our implied consent statute. So I don't think that Nash isn't on point. I just think there can be enough of a distinction within our facts of this matter to say still that it was misleading. I don't believe that the Supreme Court's ruling in Nash said that no misleading statements can, or that misleading statements can ultimately always be used. It was just that in that particular instance with those particular fact patterns that met the standard.
I thought the upshot of Nash is that in the implied consent context, all you need to say is that refusal to take the test is a crime.
I think they're saying in the situation with those facts, and it can be applied a little more generally, that can be enough. But I think within the facts, if there are further statements that have been made by the officer that could confuse someone, I don't believe it overturns prior Minnesota precedent where officers are not allowed to mislead on the implied consent, which would be, I believe, Jensen v. Commissioner of Public Safety, though that has a similar situation where they were required to give warning on the criminal consequences, and they're not allowed to mislead or confuse. when they're.
Ms. Olson, I thought that in this case that the trooper actually showed Ms. Thordson a copy of the warrant and offered her the opportunity to read it. She declined. Is that not the case?
My understanding of it, the situation was that the officer, and again, I'm trying to remember every part of the fact pattern, was that he kind of was going to hand it to her. But at that point, he had already told her once that it was going to be a blood test, that it had to be given. And then again, a blood test, and it is a crime. So she had already had the confusion at that point. And again, I think that's where our distinction with Nash can apply, that the other statements and the other facts led to it. But I do agree that I think it was handed to her, not go ahead, read this. It was just kind of handed to her. And then she just said, no, I want to move forward, because again, she thought it was a crime to take the test. So I do believe Nash can be.
What is the material misrepresentation that was made here that differs in character from Nash, that takes it outside of, I think, a very broad, clear statement in Nash?
I think the kind of the statements prior to.
Which one? Which statement?
That a blood test was going to be, that's what he was getting, was a blood test warrant. So he implied that there was only going to be a blood test.
And why is that different, materially different in quality from the misrepresentation, alleged misrepresentation in Nash that was found to be immaterial?
Because this was prior to the warrant even being granted. There was not actually yet a warrant at the time. He was applying for it. He said, that's what I'm going for. And a blood test requires a warrant. If he had been denied that, how he spoke to her could have created further confusion that in the second statement, now I have a warrant, we're going for a blood test. If you don't take a test, it's a crime. When in actuality, there is an option to have sought for a blood or urine test. That is what he did. And she would have had the option to do urine. I understand that Nash made a very clear statement, but I do think the facts are a little more distinguishable in that we had this first situation where at the time before the warrant was given, he said that's what he's doing and that's what he's going to get. And we're already in a situation where Ms. Thordson, again, is not an officer. She doesn't know what the laws are. And then going into my second point, which is the prescription drug defense, I think that the concern we have here is there is a lot of burden shifting. I understand it's an affirmative defense, and under a preponderance of the evidence standard, my client has to show enough evidence under statute that she was taking the controlled substance under the terms of the prescription issued. The issue that we have before the court is really under that there is no such thing as therapeutic levels. It's not defined. It's not in the statute at all. So to add an extra burden to say that a person would have to hire an expert, which is the only way to do it, because she is not an expert in therapeutic levels. In fact, the testimony was there is no such thing, that isn't defined.
Who was that testimony provided by Ms. Olson?
I believe it was by Ms. Thordson's expert. When asked about what therapeutic levels are, she stated that's not something that's tested. That's not what they're saying. For a person to move forward, the preponderance of the evidence is she overtaking her medication? What the court is doing and what the court did in its order makes scenarios of what could have happened, but no evidence was actually provided that is what happened. In fact, in addendum.
And so did the district court then decide not to credit the expert's testimony that there is no such thing as therapeutic levels? I guess I had some concerns about that because, in my experience as well, that with therapeutic levels, that it's really difficult to get anyone who would say, even people who are, you know, involved in pharmacology, whether a test of a person shows a therapeutic level or not, or even excessive use. And so that's why I'm asking about, you know, what was the testimony and did the district court credit it or not?
I'll be honest, Your Honor. I think there was no explicit credit or discredit of any witnesses. It was more, this is what the witness said. On page...
But was there an implicit credibility finding? And I mean, I totally hear your concern and about the therapeutic levels and requiring at a preponderance standard, requiring that level of evidence to be submitted. But if the district court implicitly discredited your client's testimony that she was taking the medication and following the instructions on the medication, then why don't you lose if because we can't reweigh the evidence and remake that credibility finding.
Well, I don't believe she made a credibility finding. I think she stated what was testified to, but that is not a credibility finding. And I'll be honest, Your Honor, I can't remember.
Well, she says she described your client's testimony. And then at the end of that section, she says, overall, the petitioner has not shown by a preponderance of the evidence that she was taking her medication as prescribed. I mean, I know she doesn't say that I discredit her testimony, but to me, reading that as a whole, she acknowledged what your client said and then said she didn't show by a preponderance of the evidence. So that's why I'm concerned that that's the biggest problem for you without even getting to the therapeutic level issue.
However, Your Honor, and I respectfully disagree, the reason where she came to that conclusion is because of the therapeutic level. In fact, as I was noting on page 7 of her order, Ms. Soust, who is the expert that my client provided, it states, quote, Ms. Soust testified that she was not an expert on the therapeutic blood concentration levels and could not say the BCA test result is consistent with petitioner taking her Adderall as prescribed. However, in the testimony and in the record, it is said that that's not normal. That isn't part of the course, as her expertise would say, that there is such thing as a therapeutic level. There is not, and I this is where I get into where I agree this is kind of a mixture of law and fact, because the statute doesn't say you have to show therapeutic levels. What it says
but there is evidence in the record, and the district court did make finding that your client was not taking her medication as prescribed. She admitted that she was not taking it as prescribed on the schedule that was prescribed. And she also mixed it with marijuana. And there was some evidence there was no evidence about how that affected the dosage or the interaction of the drugs. So it's like, what do we do with that?
So the testimony, or that's a two-part question, so I'll try to address both. Regarding the issue of marijuana, there is nothing on her prescription that says it can't be taken, that it's contravening with the results. And this is an affirmative defense by preponderance of the evidence. That would be significant, I think, burden shifting to say that she must show that on a label, or an expert can say it absolutely doesn't. What the expert had testified to was there wasn't enough information to say that it could or could not. But again, if it had been an issue or it was a concern, it was never listed on the bottle, which the prescription had been provided as evidence to the district court. Getting to the second issue of the testimony of not taking the medication, I agree that she testified she doesn't take on medication on the weekend. However, there was no testimony that she took it extra. She didn't testify to that. She testified she took
it. Why does that matter? Why does that matter? I mean, the finding or the conclusion by the district court is she did not take it as prescribed.
Because there was no evidence or facts in the record that would conclude that she didn't take it as prescribed. The choice to not take it on the weekend doesn't mean that when she took it at the time she took extra, because the point.
But isn't that the burden shifting part right there? I mean, you're now it's your burden to make the affirmative defense, and the statute says that she has to show that she's taken it as prescribed, and you're arguing there's no evidence in the record to show that she's not taking it as prescribed. So I think that's where Mr. Marr Solik was coming from.
I agree that's the position of the state. However, again, this is a, what we are saying is that she needs to prove almost a negative at that point. What she's saying is, I'm taking it as prescribed. I'm told to take it one pill a day.
But she did not. No. She said that she was not taking it as prescribed. And that's what's supported by the record. She testified that she was not taking it every day like she was supposed to.
I apologize. Let me clarify. What I mean is, during the week, she is taking one pill a day as prescribed on her medication bottle. It doesn't say on her medication bottle, I would agree, that she can skip a weekend. And there was no testimony of whether or not she could. However, at the time of the exam is what we should be looking at. And at that time, it's whether or not on that day she took it as prescribed. What the court did was it made an inference, well, not even make an inference, made a hypothetical that was not shown in the record, not shown that there those that that was true, saying, well, that could have happened, so therefore she didn't prove it. However, at the time of the incident, there was no evidence that she hadn't taken it. And I see my time is up. May I finish my sentence? Thank you. There was no evidence on the record that she hadn't taken it as prescribed on that day, which I believe is actually what the standard requires by statute. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Olson.
Thank you, Your Honors. First, I'll just briefly address the Nash warrant issue. I believe Your Honors pointed out that it is in the record that the trooper, he did mention first that he was asked for a blood test, but then he obtained the warrant, reiterated that he was asked for a blood test, and informed her that refusal to take tests is a crime. That is what Nash required. Ms. Thornton's confusion argument is something that's either trying to relitigate Nash or some form of constitutional argument that wasn't raised. To the therapeutic levels point, I understand that's what the district court wrote in its order, but in the record, the testimony is that after Ms. Seuss did testify about the therapeutic levels, there was a subsequent question about whether or not the concentration levels were consistent with whether or not she was taking the drug as prescribed based on that concentration result. And Ms. Seuss testified that she was not able to tell based on the concentration result that she was taking it consistent with her prescription. So regardless,
isn't the problem though? I mean, to Ms. Olson's point, the district court's order reads without some confirmation that the BCA test results are within therapeutic levels for petitioner based on the dosage amount of her prescribed Adderall, this court cannot conclude that she's taking her medication as prescribed. Therefore, petitioner has not shown by a preponderance of the evidence that she was not that she was taking her medication as prescribed. There's a discussion about potentially saving pills, doesn't always take it on the weekend, but it looks like the nub of the district court's reasoning there is that without confirmation that the BCA test results are within therapeutic levels, she could never find by preponderance of the evidence. That's the way that reads to me, and that's concerning. Why didn't the district court abuse its discretion by holding that the only way you could prove this is through showing of therapeutic levels?
Well, I agree that the therapeutic levels wouldn't be the only way to prove it. I think that it's not abuse of discretion because the facts in the record indicate that regardless of the therapeutic levels, Ms. Seuss couldn't confirm that the test results were consistent with her prescription levels. And because we have testimony that she wasn't taking it on the weekends, the showing that the test results were consistent with her prescription levels would be another way of indicating that she was taking it as prescribed. Like, as I said during my initial argument, I think there's a variety of ways a person could prove that they were taking it as prescribed. I don't necessarily think that expert testimony would be required if there was the district court credited the petitioner and the prescription and their expert if they brought one. If it was all consistent with them taking it as prescribed, then you might not need to, the court may or may not need to reach that level. But because there's testimony in this case that she wasn't taking it as prescribed, which the district court acknowledged, and that the concentration levels were, there's testimony that the concentration levels were not consistent with her prescription, and there is no testimony that she affirmatively could take it with marijuana, the district court did not either abuse its discretion or there's evidence sufficient in the record to support by a preponderance for support that the Ms. Thornton did not prove by a preponderance that she was taking it in accordance with the terms of her prescription.
Can I just ask you one last question? Sorry, not my last question. I won't hold anyone else to it, but footnote 5 in your reply, if we disagree with you about the whether or not she met her burden on showing that she was taking it as prescribed, you say that regarding whether or not she was under the influence or whether she was impaired by the medication, we would need to remand because the district court did not resolve that issue. But when I read that part of the district court's order, it sounded to me like the district court specifically weighed everything regarding Adderall versus marijuana and then said the best the court could conclude is that petitioner was under the influence of marijuana, which may or may not have had a combined effect. Why isn't that a resolution of that issue? Why would we need to remand?
Because I don't think that is a resolution of the issue. The district court said that it, you know, may or may not have been, and then went on to say that it doesn't need to resolve that issue. So I think the district court would have to resolve whether or not the, whether it be our burden or Ms. Thornton's burden to show whether or not she was impaired by the substance. I think
that's your burden though, right? Isn't that your burden to show that she's impaired? Because the district court has to find it, right? It doesn't say that's an affirmative defense.
It may or may not be. It's an open question whether or not that's our burden or not. I know there's some, I think the district court even acknowledges that it's not sure. I think the district court did place the burden on us, but it is an open question whether it's our burden. I see my time has expired. May I
yes.
Finish my thought? I mean, I don't want to concede that it is our burden, but I can understand that reading of the statute. I would just note that, again, I don't think the district court did resolve that issue because it said it may or may not be, and then went on to say that it didn't need to resolve that issue. And again, we would ask this court to reverse the order of the district court rescinding the Ms. Thornton's driver's license because the Supreme Court's intervening decision in Nash indicates that the trooper properly read the advisory, and because the district court properly concluded that Ms. Thornton did not meet her burden to prove the affirmative defense that she had taken her prescription as prescribed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both. Matter is submitted. We will issue a decision in the statutory time frame. That concludes our Zoom oral argument calendar this morning. We are in recess.